It wasn't the offer of help itself. My friends had been working tirelessly to help me for days, but Sim's willingness to help was different than this. His help was dependable as bread. But knowing Denna cared, that was like a swallow of warm wine on a winter night. I could feel the sweet heat of it in my chest. I smiled at her, a real smile. The expression felt odd on my face, and I wondered how long I'd been scowling without knowing it. "You're helping just by being here," I said honestly. "Just seeing you does wonders for my mood." She rolled her eyes. "Of course. The sight of my blotchy face is a panacea." "There isn't much to talk about," I said. "My bad luck got tangled up with my bad decisions, and I'm paying for it." Denna gave a chuckle that hovered on the edge of being a sob. "I wouldn't know anything about that sort of thing," she said, her lips making a wry twist. "It's worst when it's your own stupid fault, isn't it?" I felt my mouth curve to mimic hers. "It is," I said. "Truth be told, I'd prefer a bit of a distraction to a sympathetic ear." "That I can provide," she said, taking hold of my arm. "Lord knows you've done the same for me often enough in the past." I fell into step alongside her.
"Have I?"
"Endlessly," she said. "It's easy to forget when you're around." She stopped walking for a moment, and I had to stop too, as she'd linked her arm in mine. "That's not right. I mean to say, when you're around, it's easy to forget."
"Forget what?"
"Everything," she said, and for a moment, her voice wasn't quite as playful. "All the bad parts of my life. Who I am. It's nice to be able to take a vacation from myself every once in a while. You help with that. You're my safe harbor in an endless stormy sea." I chuckled.
"Am I?"
"You are," she said easily. "You are my shady willow on a sunny day. You," I said, "are sweet music in a distant room."
"That's good," she said.
"You are unexpected cake on a rainy afternoon." "You're the poultice that draws the poison from my heart," I said. Denna looked uncertain. "I don't know about that one. A heart full of poison isn't an appealing thought."
"Yeah," I admitted. That sounded better before I actually said it.
"That's what happens when you mix your metaphors," she said. A pause. "Did you get my note?"
"I got it today," I said, letting all my regret pour into my voice. "Just a couple hours ago."
"Ah," she said. "That's too bad. It was a good dinner. I ate yours, too." I tried to think of something to say, but she simply smiled and shook her head. "I'm teasing. The dinner was just an excuse, actually. I have something to show you. You're a hard man to find. I thought I was going to have to wait until tomorrow when you sang at Anchor's." I felt a sharp pang in my chest, so strong even Denna's presence couldn't entirely overwhelm it. "It's lucky you caught me today," I said. "I'm not sure I'll be playing tomorrow." She cocked her head at me. "You always sing on Felling Night. Don't change that. You're hard enough for me to find."
"You're a fine one to talk," I said. "I can never catch you in the same place twice."
"Oh, yes, I'm sure you're always looking for me," she said dismissively, then broke into an excited grin. "But that's beside the point. Come on, I'm sure this will distract you." She began to walk faster, tugging at my arm. Her enthusiasm was infectious, and I found myself smiling as I followed her through the twisting streets of Imre. Eventually, we came to a small storefront. Denna stepped in front of me, almost bouncing with excitement. All signs of her weeping were gone, and her eyes were bright. She put her cool hands over my face. "Close your eyes," she said. "It's a surprise." I closed my eyes, and she led me by the hand for a few steps. The inside of the shop was dim and smelled of leather. I heard a man's voice say,
"Is this him, then?"
followed by the hollow sound of things moving around. "Are you ready?" Denna said into my ear. I could hear the smile in her voice. Her breath tickled the hairs on the back of my neck.
I have no idea, I said honestly.
I felt the breath of her stifled laugh on my ear.
Okay. Open them.
I opened my eyes and saw a lean, older man standing behind a long wooden counter. An empty loot case lay open like a book in front of him. Denna had bought me a present. A case for my loot. A case for my stolen loot. I took a step closer. The empty case was long and slender, covered in smooth black leather. There were no hinges. Seven bright steel clasps circled the edge so the top lifted off like the lid of a box. The inside was soft velvet. I reached out to touch it and found the padding soft but resilient, like a sponge. The velvet's nap was nearly half an inch thick and a deep burgundy color. The man behind the counter gave a thin smile.
"Your lady has good taste," he said, "and a serious mind about what she desires."
He lifted the lid.
"The leather is oiled and waxed. There's two layers with rock maple bows beneath."
He ran a finger along the bottom half of the case, then pointed at the corresponding groove on the lid.
"It fits snugly enough that no air can get in or out, so you need not worry moving from a warm, wet room into an icy night."
He began to snap shut the clasps around the edge of the case.
"The lady objected to brass, so these are fine steel. And once they're in place, the lid is held against a gasket. You could submerge it in a river, and the velvet will stay dry inside."
He shrugged.
"Eventually, the water would permeate the leather, of course. But there's only so much one can do."
Flipping the case over, he rapped a knuckle hard on the rounded bottom.
"I have kept the maple thin, so it is not bulky or heavy, and reinforced it with bands of glance steel."
He gestured to where Denna stood grinning.
"The lady wanted Ramsden steel, but I explained that while Ramsden is strong, it's also rather brittle. Glance steel is lighter and retains its shape."
He looked me up and down.
"If the young master wishes, he could stand on the bowl of the case without crushing it."
His mouth pursed slightly, and he looked down at my feet.
"Though I would prefer if you did not."
He turned the case right side up again.
"I have to say, this is perhaps the finest case I have made in 20 years.
He slid it across the counter toward me.
"I hope you find it to your satisfaction."
I was driven speechless. A rarity. I reached out and ran a hand along the leather. It was warm and smooth. I touched the steel ring where the shoulder strap would attach. I looked at Denna, who was practically dancing with delight. Denna stepped forward eagerly. "This is the best part," she said, flipping open the clasps with such familiar ease I could tell she'd done it before. She pulled off the lid and prodded the inside with a finger. "The padding is designed to be moved and reset, so no matter what loot you have in the future, it will still fit. And look." She pressed the velvet where the neck would rest, twisted her fingers, and a lid popped up, revealing a hidden space underneath. She grinned again. "This was my idea, too. It's like a secret pocket."
"God's body, Denna," I said. "This must have cost you a fortune."
"Well, you know," she said with an air of affected modesty. "I had a little set aside." I ran my hand along the inside, touching the velvet.
"Denna, I'm serious.
This case must be worth as much as my loot." I trailed off, and my stomach made a nauseating twist. The loot I didn't even have anymore.
"If you don't mind my saying so, sir," the man behind the counter said, "unless you have a loot of solid silver, I'm guessing this case is worth a damn sight more than that."
I ran my hands over the lid again, feeling increasingly sick to my stomach. I couldn't think of a word to say. How could I tell her someone had stolen my loot after she'd gone through all the work of having this beautiful gift made for me? Denna grinned excitedly. "Let's see how your loot fits." She gestured, and the man behind the counter brought out my loot and set it in the case. It fit snugly as a glove. I began to cry.
God, I'm embarrassed, I said, blowing my nose.
Denna touched my arm lightly.
I'm so sorry, she repeated for the third time.
The two of us sat on the curb outside the small shop. It was bad enough bursting into tears in front of Denna. I'd wanted to compose myself without the shopkeeper staring at me, too.
I just wanted it to fit properly, Denna said, her expression stricken. I left you a note. You were supposed to come to dinner so I could surprise you. You weren't even supposed to know it was gone.
It's okay, I said.
It's obviously not, Denna said, her eyes starting to brim with tears. When you didn't show up, I didn't know what to do. I looked for you everywhere last night. I knocked on your door, but you didn't answer.
She looked down at her feet.
I can never find you when I go looking.
Denna, I said. Everything's fine. She shook her head vigorously, refusing to look at me as tears started to spill down her cheeks.
It's not fine. I should have known. You hold it like it's your baby. If anyone in my life had ever looked at me the way you look at that loot, I'd...
Denna's voice broke, and she swallowed hard before words started pouring out of her again.
I knew it was the most important thing in your life. That's why I wanted to get you somewhere safe to keep it. I just didn't think it would be so...
She swallowed again, clenching her hands into fists. Her body was so tense, she was almost trembling.
God! I'm so stupid! I never think! I always do this! I ruin everything!
Denna's hair had fallen around her face so I couldn't see her expression.
What's wrong with me?
She said, her voice low and angry.
Why am I such an idiot? Why can't I just do one thing right in my whole life?
Denna! I had to interrupt her as she was barely pausing to breathe. I laid my hand on her arm, and she grew stiff and still.
Denna! There's no way you could have known, I interrupted. You've been playing for how long? A month? Have you ever even owned an instrument?
She shook her head, her face still hidden by her hair.
I had that lyre, she said softly, but only for a few days before the fire.
She looked up at last, her expression pure misery. Her eyes and nose were red.
This happens all the time. I try to do something good, but it gets all tangled up.
She gave me a wretched look.
You don't know what it's like.
I laughed. It felt amazingly good to laugh again. It boiled up from deep in my belly and burst out of my throat like notes from a golden horn. That laugh alone was worth 3 hot meals and 20 hours of sleep.
I know exactly what it's like, I said, feeling the bruises on my knees and the pull of half-healed scars along my back.
I considered telling her how much of a mess I'd made of retrieving her ring, then decided it probably wouldn't help her mood if I explained how Ambrose was trying to kill me.
Denna, I am the king of good ideas gone terribly wrong.
She smiled at that, sniffing and rubbing at her eyes with a sleeve.
We're a lovely couple of weepy idiots, aren't we?
We are, I said.
I'm sorry, she said again, her smile fading. I just wanted to do something nice for you, but I'm no good at these things.
I took hold of Denna's hand in both of mine and kissed it. Denna, I said with perfect honesty, this is the kindest thing anyone has ever done for me. She snorted indelicately.
Pure truth, I said. You are my bright penny by the roadside. You are worth more than salt or the moon on a long night of walking. You are sweet wine in my mouth, a song in my throat, and laughter in my heart.
Denna's cheeks flushed, but I rolled on, unconcerned.
You are too good for me, I said. You are a luxury I cannot afford. Despite this, I insist you come with me today. I will buy you dinner and spend hours waxing rhapsodic over the vast landscape of wonder that is you.
I stood and pulled her to her feet.
I will play you music. I will sing you songs. For the rest of the afternoon, the rest of the world cannot touch us.
I cocked my head, making it a question.
Denna's mouth curved. That sounds nice, she said. I'd like to get away from the world for the space of an afternoon.
Hours later, I walked back to the university with a spring in my step. I whistled. I sang. My lute on my shoulder was light as a kiss. The sun was warm and soothing. The breeze was cool. My luck was beginning to change. Chapter 31, The Crucible. With my lute back in my hands, the rest of my life slid easily back into balance. My work in the fishery was easier. My classes breezed by. Elodin even seemed to make more sense. It was with a light heart that I visited Simon in the alchemy complex. He opened the door to my knocking and gestured me inside.
It worked, he said excitedly.
I eased the door shut, and he led me to a table where a series of bottles, tubes, and coal gas burners were arranged. Sim smiled proudly and held up a short, shallow jar of the sort you use to store face paint or rouge.
Can you show me?
I asked. Sim lit a small coal gas burner, and the flame fanned against the bottom of a shallow iron pan. We stood quietly for a moment, listening to it hiss.
I got new boots, Sim said conversationally, lifting up a foot so I could see.
They're nice, I said automatically, then paused and looked closer.
Are those hobnails?
I asked incredulously. He grinned viciously. I laughed. The iron pan grew hot, and Sim unscrewed the jar, pressing the pad of his index finger into the translucent substance inside. Then, with a little flourish, he raised his hand and pressed the tip of his finger onto the surface of the hot iron pan. I winced. Sim smiled smugly and stood there for the space of a long breath before pulling his finger away.
Incredible, I said. You guys do some crazy things over here. A heat shield.
No, Sim said seriously. That's absolutely the wrong way to think about it. It's not a shield. It's not an insulator. It's like an extra layer of skin that burns away before your real skin gets hot.
Like having water on your hands, I said.
Sim shook his head again.
No, water conducts heat. This doesn't.
So it is an insulator.
Okay, Sim said, exasperated. You need to shut up and listen. This is alchemy. You know nothing about alchemy.
I made a placating gesture.
I know, I know.
Say it then. Say, I know nothing about alchemy.
I glowered at him.
Alchemy isn't just chemistry with some extra bits, he said. That means if you don't listen to me, you'll jump to your own conclusions and be dead wrong. Dead and wrong.
I took a deep breath and let it out.
Okay, tell me.
You'll have to spread it on quickly, he said. You'll only have about 10 seconds to get it spread evenly onto your hands and lower arms.
He made a gesture to his mid-forearm.
It won't rub away, but you'll lose a bit if you chafe at your hands too much. Don't touch your face at all. Don't rub your eyes. Don't pick your nose. Don't bite your fingernails. It's sort of poisonous.
Sort of? I asked.
He ignored me, holding out the finger he'd pressed onto the hot iron pan.
It's not like armor gloves. As soon as it's exposed to heat, it begins to burn away.
Will there be any smell? I asked.
Anything that will give it away?
No, it doesn't really burn, technically. It simply breaks down.
What does it break down into?
Things, Simmons said testily. It breaks down into complicated things you can't understand because you don't know anything about alchemy.
Is it safe to breathe? I amended.
Yes. I wouldn't give it to you otherwise. This is an old formula, tried and true. Now, because it doesn't transmit heat, your hands will go straight from feeling cool to being pressed up hard against something burning hot.
He gave me a pointed look.
I advise you to stop touching hot things before it's all used up.
How can I tell when it's about to be used up?
You can't, he said simply. Which is why I advise using something other than your bare hands.
Wonderful.
If it mixes with alcohol, it will turn acidic. Only mildly, though. You'd have plenty of time to wash it off. If it mixes with a little water, like your sweat, that's fine. But if it mixes with a lot of water, say 100 parts to 1, it will turn flammable.
And if I mix it with piss, it turns into delicious candy, right? I laughed. Did you make a bet with Willem about how much of this I'd swallow? Nothing becomes flammable when you mix it with water. Sim's eyes narrowed. He picked up an empty crucible. Fine, he said. Fill this up, then. Still smiling, I moved to the water canister in the corner of the room. It was identical to the ones in the fishery. Pure water is important for artificing, too, especially when you're mixing clays and quenching metals you don't want contaminated. I splashed some water into the crucible and brought it back to Sim. He dipped the tip of his finger into it, swirled it around, and poured it into the hot iron pan. Thick orange flame roared up, burning 3 feet high until it flickered and died. Sim set down the empty crucible with a slight click and looked at me gravely. Say it. I looked down at my feet. I know nothing about alchemy. Sim nodded, seeming pleased. Right, he said, turning back to the work table. Let's go over this again. Chapter 32, Blood and Ash. Leaves crunched underfoot as I made my way through the forest to the north of the university. The pale moonlight filtering through the bare trees wasn't enough to see clearly, but I had made this trip several times in the last span and knew the way by heart. I smelled wood smoke long before I heard voices and glimpsed firelight through the trees. It wasn't really a clearing, just a quiet space hidden behind a rocky outcrop. A few pieces of fieldstone and the trunk of a fallen tree provided makeshift seats. I had dug the fire pit myself a few days ago. It was over a foot deep and 6 across, lined with stones. It dwarfed the small campfire currently burning there. Everyone else was already there. Mola and Fella shared the log bench. Willem was hunkered down on a stone. Sim sat cross-legged on the ground, poking at the fire with a stick. Will looked up as I came out of the trees. In the flickering firelight, his eyes looked dark and sunken. He and Sim had been watching over me for almost 2 whole span. You're late, he said. Sim looked up to see me, cheerful as always, but there were marks of exhaustion on his face, too. Is it finished? He asked, excited. I nodded. Unbuttoning my cuff, I rolled up my shirt sleeve to reveal an iron disc slightly larger than a Commonwealth penny. It was covered in fine sigildry and inlaid with gold. My newly finished gram. It was strapped flat against the inside of my forearm with a pair of leather cords. A cheer went up from the group. Interesting way to wear it, Mola said. Fashionable in a sort of barbarian raider way. It works best in contact with skin, I explained, and I need to keep it out of sight since I'm not supposed to know how to make one. Practical and stylish, Mola said. Simon wandered over and peered at it, reaching out to touch it with a finger. It seems so small.
Ah!
Sim cried out as he jumped backward, wringing his hand.
Black damn!
He swore, embarrassed. I'm sorry. It startled me as all.
Kist and Krail,
I said, my own heart racing. What's the matter? Have you ever touched one of the Arcanum Guilders? He asked. The ones they give you when you become a full Arcanist? I nodded. It sort of buzzed, made my hand go numb like it had fallen asleep. Sim nodded toward my gram, shaking his hand. It feels like that. Surprised me. I didn't know the Guilders acted as grams, too, I said. Makes sense, though.
Have you tested it? Willem asked.
I shook my head. It seemed a little strange for me to test it myself, I admitted.
You want one of us to do it, Simon laughed.
You're right. That's perfectly normal.
I also thought it would be convenient to have a physicker nearby.
I nodded in Mola's direction. Just in case.
I didn't know I was going to be needed in my professional capacity tonight, Mola protested. I didn't bring my kit.
It shouldn't be necessary, I said, as I brought a block of sympathy wax out of my cloak and brandished it. Who wants to do the honors? There was a moment of silence, then Fella held out her hand.
I'll make the doll, but I'm not sticking it with a pin.
Venada, Willem said.
Simon shrugged. Fine. I'll do it, I guess. I handed the block of wax to Fella, and she began warming it with her hands.
Do you want to use hair or blood?
She asked softly. Both, I said, trying not to let my growing anxiety show. I need to be absolutely sure of it if I'm going to be able to sleep at night. I pulled out a hatpin, pricked the back of my hand, and watched a bright bead of blood well up.
That won't work, Fella said, still working the wax with her hands. Blood won't mix with wax. It'll just bead up and squish out.
And how did you come by that tidbit of information? Simon teased uneasily. Fella flushed, ducking her head a little, causing her long hair to cascade off her shoulder.
Candles. When you make colored candles, you can't use a water-based dye. It needs to be powder or oil. It's a solubility issue. Polar and non-polar alignments.
I love the university, Sim said to Willem on the other side of the fire. Educated women are so much more attractive.
I'd like to say the same, Mola said dryly, but I've never known any educated men.
I bent down and picked up a pinch of ash from the fire pit, then dusted it over the back of my hand where it absorbed the blood.
That should work, Fella said.
This flesh will burn. To ash all things return,
Willem intoned in a somber voice, then turned to Simon.
Isn't that what it says in your holy book?
It's not my holy book, Simon said, but you're close. To ash all things return, so too this flesh will burn.
You two are certainly enjoying yourselves, Mola observed dryly.
I am giddy thinking of a full night's sleep, Willem said. An evening's entertainment is coffee after cake.
Fella held out the blob of soft wax, and I pressed the wet ash into it. She kneaded it again, then began to mold it, her fingers patting it into a man-shaped doll in a few deft motions. She held it out for the group to see. Quoth's head is way bigger than that, Simon said with his boyish grin. I also have genitals, I said as I took the mommet from Fella and fixed a hair to the top of its head. But at a certain point, realism becomes unproductive. I walked over to Sim and handed him both the simulacra and the long hatpin. He took one in each hand, looking uneasily back and forth between them.
You sure about this?
I nodded.
Fair enough.
Sim drew a deep breath and squared his shoulders. His forehead furrowed in concentration as he stared at the doll. I doubled over, shrieking and clutching at my leg. Fella gasped. Willem leapt to his feet. Simon went wide-eyed with panic, holding the doll and pin stiff-armed away from each other. He looked around wildly at everyone.
I didn't...
I straightened up, brushing at my shirt. Just practicing, I said. Was the scream too girly? Simon went limp with relief.
Damn you, he said weakly, laughing. That's not funny, you bastard.
He continued to laugh helplessly as he wiped away the sheen of sweat from his forehead. Willem muttered something in Siaru and returned to his seat.
You three are as good as a traveling troupe, Mola said.
Simon took a deep breath and let it out slowly. He reset his shoulders and brought the doll and the pin up in front of him. His hand shook.
Taylu, anyway, he said. You scared the hell out of me. I can't do this now.
For the love of God.
Mola stood and walked around the fire pit to stand over Simon. She held out her hands.
Give it to me.
She took the mommet and pin and turned to look me in the eye.
Are you ready?
Just a second. After two span of constant vigilance, letting go of the alar that protected me felt like prying open a fist gone stiff from clutching something too long. After a moment, I shook my head. I felt strange without the alar, almost naked.
Don't hold back, but hit me in the leg, just in case.
Mola paused, murmured a binding, and drove the pin through the leg of the doll.
Silence. Everyone watched me, motionless. I didn't feel a thing.
I'm fine, I said.
Everyone started to breathe again as I gave Mola a curious look.
Was that really everything you had?
No,
Mola said frankly as she pulled the pin out of the doll's leg and knelt to hold it over the fire.
That was a gentle test run. I didn't want to listen to your girly scream again.
She pulled the pin back out of the fire and stood up.
I'm going to come charging in for real this time.
She poised the pin over the doll and looked at me.
You ready?
I nodded. She closed her eyes for a moment, then murmured a binding and stabbed a hot pin through the mommet's leg. The metal of the gram went cool against the inside of my arm, and I felt a brief pressure against my calf muscle, as if someone had prodded me with a finger. I looked down to make sure Simon wasn't getting some revenge by poking at me with a stick. Because I wasn't watching, I missed what Mola did next, but I felt three more dull prods, one in each arm and the other in the thick muscle just above my knee. The gram grew colder. I heard Fella gasp and looked up in time to see Mola, grim-faced and resolute, toss the mommet into the heart of the campfire, murmuring another binding. As the wax doll arced through the air, Simon let out a startled yelp. Willem came to his feet again, almost lunging at Mola, but too late to stop her. The mommet landed among the red coals with an explosion of sparks. My gram went almost painfully cold against my arm, and I laughed crazily. Everyone turned to look at me, their expressions in various stages of horror and disbelief.
I'm fine, I said. This feels really weird, though. It's flickery, like standing in a warm, thick wind.
The gram grew icy against my arm. Then the odd sensation faded as the doll melted, destroying the sympathetic link. The fire leapt up as the wax began to burn.
Did it hurt?
Simon asked anxiously.
Not a bit, I said. And that was everything I had, Mola said. To do any more, I would have to have a forge fire at my disposal.
And she's Eltha, Simon said smugly. I bet she's three times the sympathist Ambrose is.
At least three times, I said. But if anyone was going to go out of their way to find a forge fire, it would be Ambrose. You can overwhelm a gram if you throw enough at it.
So, we're going ahead with things tomorrow? Mola asked. I nodded. I'd rather be safe than sore. Simon poked a stick at the spot in the fire where the doll had landed.
If Mola can do her worst, and it just rolls off you, it might be enough to keep Davy off your back, too. Give you some breathing room.
There was a brief moment of silence. I held my breath, hoping Fella and Mola wouldn't take any particular note of his comment. Mola raised an eyebrow at me.
Davy?
I glared at Simon, and he gave me a piteous look, like a dog that knows it's going to be kicked.
I borrowed some money from a Gaelic named Davy, I said, hoping she'd be satisfied with that.
Mola continued to look at me.
And?
I sighed. Ordinarily, I would have avoided the subject, but Mola tended to be insistent about this sort of thing, and I desperately needed her help for tomorrow's plan.
Davy used to be a member of the Arcanum, I explained. I gave her some of my blood as collateral for a loan at the beginning of the term. When Ambrose started attacking me, I jumped to the wrong conclusion and accused her of malfeasance. Our relationship went sour after that.
Mola and Fella exchanged a look.
You do go out of your way to make life exciting, don't you?
Mola said.
I already admitted it was a mistake, I said, irritated. What else do you want from me?
Are you going to be able to pay her back? Fella interjected into the conversation before things became heated between Mola and me.
I honestly don't know, I admitted. With a few lucky breaks and some long nights in the fishery, I might be able to scrape enough together by the end of the term.
I didn't mention the whole truth. While I might have a chance of earning enough to pay Davy back, I wouldn't have a chance in hell of making my tuition at the same time. I didn't want to spoil everyone's evening with the fact that Ambrose had won. By forcing me to spend so much time hunting for a gram, he'd effectively driven me out of the university.
Fella tilted her head to one side.
What happens if you can't pay her?
Nothing good, Willem said darkly. They don't call her Demon Davy for nothing.
I'm not sure, I said. She could sell my blood. She said she knew someone willing to buy it.
I'm sure she wouldn't do that, Fella said.
I wouldn't blame her, I said. I knew what I was getting into when I made the deal. But she... It's just the way the world works, I said firmly, not wanting to dwell on it any more than necessary. I wanted the evening to end on a positive note. I, for one, am looking forward to a good night's sleep in my own bed. I looked around to see Will and Sim nodding weary agreement. I'll see everyone tomorrow. Don't be late. Later that night, I slept in the luxury of my narrow bed in my tiny room. At some point, I stirred awake, dragged into consciousness by the sensation of chill metal against my skin. I smiled, rolled over, and slid back into blissful sleep.
Chapter 33. Fire. I packed my travel sack carefully the next evening, anxious that I might forget some key piece of equipment. I was checking everything a third time when there was a knock on the door. I opened it to see a young boy of 10 or so standing there, breathing hard. His eyes darted to my hair, and he looked relieved.
Are you Koth?
Quoth, I said, and yes, I am.
Got a message for you.
He reached into a pocket and pulled out a bedraggled piece of paper. I held out my hand, and the boy took a step back, shaking his head.
The lady said you'd give me a jot for bringing it to you.
I doubt that, I said, holding out my hand. Let me see the note. I'll give you halfpenny if it's really for me. The boy scowled and grudgingly handed it over. It wasn't even sealed, just folded over twice. It was also vaguely damp. Looking at the sweat-soaked boy, I could guess why. It read, Quoth, your presence is graciously requested for dinner tonight. I've missed you. I have exciting news. Please meet me at the Barrel and Boar at Fifth Bell. Yours, Denna. Postscript. I promised the boy halfpenny.
Fifth Bell? I demanded. God's black hands! How long did you take to get here? It's past Sixth Bell already! That ain't my fault, he said, scowling fiercely. I've been looking all over for hours. Anchors, she said. Take it to Koth at Anchors on the other side of the river. But this place ain't by the docks at all, and there ain't any anchors on the sign outside. How's the one supposed to find this place?
You ask someone, I shouted.
Black damn, boy, how thick are you?
I fought down a very real urge to strangle him and took a deep breath. I looked out the window at the fading light. In less than half an hour, my friends would be gathering around the fire pit in the woods. I didn't have time for a trip to Imre.
Right,
I said as calmly as I could manage. I dug out a stub of pencil and scratched out a note on the other side of the piece of paper. Denna, I'm terribly sorry. Your runner didn't find me until past Sixth Bell. He is unutterably thick. I have missed you as well, and offer to put myself entirely at your disposal at any hour of the day or night tomorrow. Send the boy back with your response to let me know when and where. Fondly, Quoth. Postscript. If the boy tries to get any money off you, give him a sharp cuff round the ear. He'll get his money when he returns your note to Anchors, assuming he doesn't get confused and eat it along the way. I folded it over again and pressed a blob of soft candle wax over the fold. I felt my purse. Over the last month, I'd slowly burned through the extra 2 talents I'd borrowed from Davy. I'd squandered the money on luxuries like bandages, coffee, and the materials for tonight's plan. As a result, all I had to my name was 4 pennies and a lonely shim. I shouldered my travel sack and motioned for the boy to follow me downstairs. I nodded to Anchor, standing behind the bar, then turned to the boy.
Okay, I said.
You bollocked things up getting here, but I'm going to give you a chance to make it right. I pulled out 3 pennies and held them out for him to see. You head back to the Barrel and Boar, find the woman who sent you, and you give her this. I held up the note. She'll send back a reply. You bring it here and give it to him. I pointed to Anchor. And he'll give you the money.
I ain't an idiot, the boy said. I want a halfpenny first.
I ain't an idiot either, I said. You'll get 3 whole pennies when you bring her note back. He glared at me, then nodded sullenly. I handed him the note, and he ran out the door.
Boy seemed a little addled when he came in here, Anchor said.
I shook my head. He's witless as a sheep, I said. I wouldn't use him at all, but he knows what she looks like. I sighed and put the 3 pennies on the bar. You'd be doing me a favor if you read the note to make sure the boy isn't faking. Anchor gave me a bit of an uncomfortable look.
And what if it's of an, personal nature?
Then I'll dance a merry little jig, I said. But between the two of us, I hardly think that's likely. The sun had set by the time I made it into the forest. Willem was already there, kindling a fire in the wide pit. We worked together for a quarter hour, gathering enough wood to keep a bonfire burning for hours. Simon arrived a few minutes later, dragging a long section of dead branch. The 3 of us broke it into pieces and made nervous small talk until Fella came out of the trees. Her long hair was pinned up, leaving her elegant neck and shoulders bare. Her eyes were dark, and her mouth was slightly redder than usual. Her long black gown was gathered close at her narrow waist and well-rounded hips. She was also displaying the most spectacular pair of breasts I'd ever seen at that point in my young life. We all gaped, but Simon gaped openly.
Wow, he said. I mean, you were the most beautiful woman I'd ever seen before this. I didn't think there was any further for you to go.
He laughed his boyish laugh and gestured at her with both hands.
Look at you! You're incredible!
Fella flushed and looked away, obviously pleased. You have the hardest part tonight, I said to her.
I hate to ask, but you're the only irresistibly attractive woman we know,
Simon chimed in. Our backup plan was to stuff Willem into a dress. Nobody wants that.
Willem nodded. Agreed.
Only for you.
Fella's mouth quirked into an ironic smile. When I said I owed you a favor, I never guessed you'd ask me to go out on a date with another man. The smile went a little sour, especially Ambrose. You only need to put up with him for an hour or two. Try to get him to Imre if you can, but anywhere at least 100 yards from the pony will do.
Fella sighed. At least I'll get dinner out of this.
She looked at Simon.
I like your boots.
He grinned.
They're new.
I turned at the sound of approaching footsteps. Mola was the only one of us not here, but I heard murmured voices mixed with the footsteps and gritted my teeth. It was probably a pair of young lovers out enjoying the unseasonably warm weather. The group of us couldn't be seen together, not tonight. It would raise too many questions. I was just about to rush out to intercept them when I recognized Mola's voice.
Just wait here while I explain, she said. Please, just wait. It will make things easier.
Let him pitch a 12-color fit, a familiar female voice came out of the darkness. Let him shit out his liver for all I care.
I stopped in my tracks. I knew the second voice, but I couldn't put my finger on who it belonged to. Mola emerged from the dark trees. At her side was a small figure with short strawberry blonde hair. Davy. I stood stunned as Mola came closer, holding out her hands in a placating gesture and speaking quickly.
Quoth, I know Davy from a long while ago. She showed me the ropes back when I was new here, back before she left.
Expelled, Davy said proudly. I'm not ashamed of it.
Mola continued hurriedly.
After what you said yesterday, it seemed like there was some misunderstanding. When I stopped in to ask her about it,
she shrugged.
The whole story kind of came out. She wanted to help.
I want a piece of Ambrose, Davy said.
There was a weight of cold fury in her voice when she said his name.
My help is largely incidental.
Willem cleared his throat.
Would we be correct in assuming...
He beats his whores, Davy said, interrupting him abruptly. And if I could kill the arrogant bastard and get away with it, I would have done it years ago.
She stared flatly at Willem.
And yes, we have a past. And no, it's none of your business. Is that enough reason for you?
There was a tense silence. Willem nodded, his face carefully blank. Davy turned to look at me.
Davy,
I made a short bow to her.
I'm sorry.
She blinked in surprise.
Well, I'll be damned, she said, her voice sharp with sarcasm. Maybe you do have half a brain in your head.
I didn't think I could trust you, I said. I was wrong, and I regret it. It wasn't the clearest thinking I've ever done.
She eyed me for a long moment.
We're not friends, she said curtly, her expression still icy. But if you're still alive at the end of all this, we'll talk.
Davy looked past me, and her expression softened.
Little fella?
She brushed past me and gave Fella a hug.
You're all grown up!
She stepped back and held Fella at arm's length, looking her over appreciatively.
My lord! You look like a 10-stripe Modegan whore! He'll love it!
Fella smiled and spun a little so the bottom of her dress flared.
It is nice to have an excuse to dress up every once in a while. You should be dressing up on your own, Davy said, and for better men than Ambrose.
I've been busy. I'm out of practice preening. It took me an hour to remember how to do my hair. Any advice?
She held her arms out to her sides and did a slow turn. Davy looked her up and down with a calculating eye.
You're already better than he deserves. But you're all bare. Why don't you have any sparkle on you?
Fella looked down at her hands.
Rings won't work with the gloves, she said, and I didn't have anything nice enough to go with the dress.
Here, then.
Davy tilted her head and reached up under her hair, first on one side, then the other. Then she stepped closer to Fella.
Lord, you're tall. Bend down.
When Fella straightened up again, she was wearing a pair of earrings that swung and caught the light of the fire. Davy stepped back and gave an exasperated sigh.
And they look better on you, of course.
She shook her head with irritation.
Good lord, woman. If I had tits like yours, I'd own half the world by now.
You and me both, Sim said enthusiastically.
Willem burst out laughing, then covered his face and stepped away from Sim, shaking his head and doing his best to look like he didn't have the slightest idea who was standing next to him.
Davy looked at Sim's unashamed, boyish grin, then back to Fella.
Who's the idiot?
I caught Mola's eye and motioned her closer so we could talk.
You didn't need to, but thanks. It's a relief knowing she's not out there plotting against me.
Don't assume, Mola said grimly. I've never seen her so angry. It just seemed a shame for the two of you to be at odds. You're a lot alike.
I darted a glance across the fire pit where Will and Sim were cautiously approaching Davy and Fella.
I've heard a lot about you, Willem said, looking at Davy. I thought you'd be taller.
How's that working out for you? Davy asked dryly. Thinking, I mean.
I waved my hands to get everyone's attention.
It's late, I said. We have to get into position.
Fella nodded.
I want to be there early, just in case.
She straightened her gloves nervously.
Wish me luck.
Mola walked over and gave her a quick hug.
It'll be fine. Stay somewhere public with him. He'll behave better if people are watching.
Keep asking him about his poetry, Davy advised. He'll talk the time away.
If he gets impatient, compliment the wine, Mola added. Say things like, oh, I'd love another glass, but I'm worried it'd go right to my head. He'll buy a bottle and try to pour it into you.
Davy nodded.
It'll keep him off you for an extra half hour at least.
She reached out and pulled up the top of Fella's dress a bit.
Start conservative, then bring them out a little more toward the end of the dinner. Lean. Use your shoulders. If he keeps seeing more and more, he'll think he's getting somewhere. It'll keep him from getting grabby.
This is the most terrifying thing I've ever seen, Willem said quietly.
Do all the women in the world secretly know each other? Sim asked. Because that would explain a lot.
There's barely 100 of us in the Arcanum, Davy said scathingly. They confine us to a single wing of the Muse, whether or not we actually want to live there. How can we not know each other?
I walked over to Fella and handed her a slender oak twig. I'll signal you when we're done. You signal me if he walks out on you.
Fella arched an eyebrow. A woman could take that slightingly, she said, then smiled and slid the twig inside one of her long black gloves.
Her earrings swung and caught the light again. They were emeralds. Smooth emerald teardrops.
Those are lovely earrings, I said to Davy. Where did you come by them?
Her eyes narrowed, as if she were trying to decide whether or not to take offense.
A pretty young boy used them to settle his debt, she said. Not that it's any of your business.
I shrugged.
Just curious.
Fellow waved and walked off, but before she made it 10 feet, Simon caught up with her. He smiled awkwardly, talking and making a few emphatic gestures before handing her something. She smiled and tucked it into her long black glove.
I turned to Davy.
I assume you know the plan?
She nodded.
How far is it to his room?
A little more than half a mile, I said apologetically. The slippage...
Davy cut me off with a gesture.
I do my own calculations, she said sharply.
Right. I gestured to where my travel sack lay near the edge of the fire pit. There's wax and clay in there. I handed her a slim birch twig. I'll signal you when we're in position. Start with the wax. Give it a hard half hour, then signal and move on to the clay. Give the clay at least an hour.
Davy snorted. With a bonfire behind me, it'll take me 15 minutes, tops.
It might not be tucked into his sock drawer, you realize. It might be locked away without much air.
Davy waved me away. I know my business.
I made a half bow.
I leave it in your capable hands.
That's it? Mola demanded indignantly. You lectured me for an hour. You quizzed me.
There isn't time, I said simply.
And you'll be here to coach her if need be. Besides, Davy happens to be one of the handful of people I suspect might be a better sympathist than me.
Davy gave me a dark look.
Suspect? I beat you like a red-headed stepchild. You are my little sympathy hand puppet.
That was two span ago, I said. I've learned a lot since then.
Hand puppet?
Sim asked Willem.
Will made an explanatory gesture, and they both burst out laughing.
I motioned to Willem. Let's go.
Before we could head out, Sim handed me a small jar.
I gave it an odd look. I already had his alchemical concoction tucked away in my cloak.
What's this?
It's just ointment in case you get burned, he explained. But if you mix it with piss, it turns into candy.
Sim's expression was deadpan.
Delicious candy.
I nodded seriously.
Yes, sir.
Mola stared in confusion. Davy pointedly ignored us and began piling wood on the fire. An hour later, Willem and I were playing cards at the Golden Pony. The common room was nearly full, and a harpist was doing a passable version of Sweet Winter Rye. The room was full of murmured conversation as wealthy customers gambled, drank, and talked about whatever rich people talk about. How to properly beat the stable boy, I guessed, or techniques for chasing the chambermaid around the estate. The Golden Pony was not my sort of place. The clientele was too well-bred, the drinks too expensive, and the musicians more pleasing to the eye than the ear. Despite all this, I'd been coming here for nearly 2 span, making a show of trying to climb the social ladder. That way, no one could say it was odd I was here on this particular night. Willem took a drink and shuffled the cards. My own drink sat half-finished and warm. It was only simple ale, but given the prices at the pony, I was now quite literally penniless. Will dealt another hand of breath. I picked up my cards carefully, as Simmons' alchemical concoction made my fingers ever so slightly sticky. We might as well have been playing with blank cards. I drew and threw randomly, pretending to concentrate on the game when really I was waiting. Listening. I felt a slight tickle in the corner of my eye and reached to rub it away with my fingers, catching myself at the last second with my hand upraised. Willem stared at me from across the table, his eyes alarmed, and gave his head a small, firm shake. I went motionless for a moment, then slowly lowered my hand. I was so busy trying to appear nonchalant that when the cry came from outside, I was actually startled. It cut through the low murmur of conversation as only a shrill voice filled with panic can.
Fire! Fire!
Everyone in the pony froze for a moment. This always happens when people are startled and confused. They take a second to look around, smell the air, and think things like, "Did he just say fire?" or "Fire? Where? Here?" I didn't hesitate. I leapt to my feet and made a show of looking around wildly, obviously trying to search out the fire. By the time everyone else in the common room started to move, I was already dashing for the stairs.
"Fire!"
the cries continued from outside.
"Oh, God! Fire!"
I smiled as I listened to Basil overact his small part. I didn't know him well enough to let him in on the whole plan, but it was vital that someone notice the fire early so I could spring into action. The last thing I wanted to do was accidentally burn down half the inn. I reached the top of the steps and looked around the upper floor of the Golden Pony. There were already footsteps pounding up the stairs behind me. A few wealthy lodgers opened their doors, peering into the hallway. There were faint wisps of smoke curling underneath the door to Ambrose's rooms. Perfect.
"I think it's over here!"
I shouted, sliding a hand into one of my cloak's pockets as I ran to the door. In the long days we spent searching the archives, I'd found reference to a great many interesting pieces of artificery. One of them was an elegant piece of artificery called a siege stone. It worked on the most basic sympathetic principles. A crossbow stores energy and uses it to shoot a bolt a long distance at a great speed. A siege stone was an inscribed piece of lead that stores energy and uses it to move itself about 6 inches with the force of a battering ram. Reaching the middle of the hallway, I braced myself and charged Ambrose's door with my shoulder. I also struck it with a siege stone I held concealed against the flat of my hand. The thick timbered door staved in like a barrel struck by an anvil hammer. There were startled gasps and exclamations from everyone in the hallway. I rushed inside, trying desperately to keep the manic grin off my face. Ambrose's sitting room was dark and made darker by a haze of smoke in the air. I saw flickering firelight inside, off to the left. From my previous visit, I knew it was his bedroom.
"Hello?" I shouted. "Is everyone all right?"
I pitched my voice carefully, bold, but concerned. No panic, of course. I was, after all, the hero of this scene. Smoke was thick in the bedroom, catching the orange firelight and stinging my eyes. There was a massive wooden chest of drawers against the wall, big as a workbench in the fishery. Flames licked and flickered around the edges of the drawers. Apparently Ambrose had been keeping the marmot in his sock drawer. I picked up a nearby chair and used it to smash the window I'd climbed through several nights ago.
"Clear the street!"
I shouted down. The bottommost left drawer seemed to be burning the hottest, and when I pulled it open, the smoldering clothes inside caught the air hungrily and burst into flame. I smelled burning hair and hoped I hadn't lost my eyebrows. I didn't want to spend the next month looking constantly surprised. After the initial flare-up, I drew a deep breath, stepped forward, and pulled the heavy wooden drawer free of the bureau with my bare hands. It was full of smoldering, blackened cloth. But as I ran to the window, I could hear something hard in the bottom of the drawer rattling against the wood. It tumbled as I threw it out the window, clothes bursting into flame as the wind caught them. Next, I yanked out the top right-hand drawer. As soon as I pulled it free, smoke and flame poured out in an almost solid mass. With these two drawers gone, all the empty space inside the bureau formed a crude chimney, giving the fire all the air it wanted. As I heaved the second drawer out the window, I could actually hear the hollow rush of fire spreading through the varnished wood and the clothes inside. Down in the street, people drawn by the commotion were doing their best to put out the flaming debris. In the middle of the small crowd,
Simmons stomped about in his new hobnail boots, smashing things to flinders like a boy splashing in puddles after the first spring rain. Even if the